The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Over the past number of years, much has been made of the apparent omission of former Northern Ireland Secretary Mo Molum from her role in the Good Friday Agreement. And while Ms. Molum's role in that crucial agreement is frequently overlooked, so too are many of the female victims of the Troubles. And those women are the subject of journalist and author Martin Dillon's new book, which is called The Sorrow and the Loss, The Tragic Shadow Cast by the Troubles on the Lives of Women. Martin is with me in studio. Good morning and welcome.
It's good to see you again.
Good to see you again. Every couple of years.
Yes, every couple of years we meet, yeah, to discuss whatever book I've written.
Now, talk to me. What begat this book?
I was sitting on a beach in Eastern Europe about 2-3 years ago. And I thought, I'm going to write my last book about Ireland. And I said to my wife, you know, I'm going to write a book about women. She said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, because thinking back on what I've written, I never focused on the role of women in society during the Troubles. Nobody did, really. I mean, they were a kind of marginalized group. They weren't really heard from that much. They didn't have the kind of power to change anything. They didn't have the power within the paramilitary, certainly not within the IRA. Because women in the IRA, as people probably don't understand, had roles which were related to the military operations, but they were not given the same kind of status as men. So I thought, well, I'm going to write this book because there are, you know, a lot of women I'd love to talk to. And I started talking to them. I discovered many of them were suffering PTSD, and they'd been sitting for decades waiting for answers to who killed their husband, who killed my son, and why wasn't someone brought to justice. And they all, on both sides of the divide, had that same request, give us answers, right?
Yeah. Now, it's an all-Ireland story because, I mean, when we think of OMA, for example, the bomb constructed in the Republic and transported across the border, there was a case you deal with an eminent judge and his wife who were killed traveling from the south, having taken a ferry. We might talk about that in a little while. And then as they crossed the border to meet up with their security, they were blown to pieces. And then, of course, the bombs in Dublin. And that's where chapter one starts. You call it the accident.
I was shocked. I mean, I'd covered so much of the Troubles in writing books. And when I got to that particular topic, as far as Dublin was concerned, and, you know, I was told this was an accident. This was always called the accident, you know.
Which is insane. That's
not
true.
I mean, it just wasn't. I mean, of course. I mean, but I had to say to myself, well, why was it called the accident? I think there was a kind of built-in mechanism here in the Republic to say, well, we don't want this stuff sort of washing over us from the north. Let's just kind of tamp it down, you know, forget about it. Even though they knew that loyalists were involved, some people blamed the IRA. That was convenient as well in terms of introducing legislation to deal with them. And the British were very happy with that. The British knew, I mean, that loyalists were involved in bombing Dublin. But to be called the accident and for victims, you know, for survivors to say, well, you know, lawyers called it the accident as well. I was shocked. Yeah. I could not believe that happened.
And even some of the victims would learn to refer to it as the accident.
Yeah, but they talked about the accident. They talked to their lawyers about the accident and friends. And it was never anything else. And that never happened anywhere else.
We see what happened on that day through the eyes of a 16-year-old called Bernie O'Hanlon. Tell me about Bernie.
Bernie is, I think, one of the amazing people that I met writing this book. She's just so honest and so open. And she was just a young girl working in a shoe shop, you know, the day that happened. And, you know, it really did impact her life because she lost her eye. And, you know, that's about looks, about your personal...
At that age, particularly.
At that age, particularly, when you're sort of meeting boys, you're going to discos or whatever. But she fought her way through it, and she's come out of it as an absolutely amazing human being. I was so impressed by her.
And she survived because she was serving a customer and she had to go into the back room to get shoes.
Yeah, isn't that just amazing? The things that happen in life, she goes into the back room and the bomb goes off. But she actually behaved so correctly and so courageously in trying to sort of help another woman who died that day beside her. Bernie's story really impacted me a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought, I'm very, very sad for this woman that she had to go through this. And yet she is so positive.
So resilient.
Know? Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, we'll move to another woman. And this is from a chapter called Death on the Frontlines. And a woman called Tracy Ellen Doak. Who was she?
She was a young policewoman who had a brilliant career ahead of her. I mean, absolutely brilliant. She was really special. And even though she was a Protestant, she was a very well-considered Irish dancer. And so was her mother. And her mother actually ran an Irish dancing school, can you imagine? I mean, this was, you know, in Protestant Northern Ireland. Mm. They were very sort of positive people. She wanted to become a policewoman from she was very young. And she went through the ranks. And, you know, the thing about it was that her father was also a cop, you see. So there was that family connection. But she dies on a day when really all she's supposed to be doing is guarding a truck carrying money from the Irish
Brinksmat truck.
And she's with three of her colleagues.
And she had already chosen her wedding dress. I mean, this is how poignant it becomes.
But this is the thing, isn't there? I mean, there's another young woman in this who marries a soldier, and the day they get married, he's told that he's going to Northern Ireland, and a couple of months later he's dead, he's blown up in South Armagh. And her whole life changes. And when she meets boyfriends, they sort of say to her, but you love your dead husband more than you love us. And when she marries a guy, he makes the same kind of comment that she has to leave him eventually. All these people suffered in different ways that we didn't see. I mean, this was the kind of hidden pain, I think, that was missed by myself and by so many others when covering the Troubles.
Now, moving on to the killing, the bombing of the judge, and, you know, it could have gone, from the IRA's point of view, it went right. They got their targets. But it was so dangerously done, they could have killed many, many people.
The IRA was totally reckless. That stretch of border road, I mean, if you think about it, the number of people who were killed on it, it couldn't be protected. But, of course, this was the Irish South Armagh Brigade. It was probably one of the most lethal groups within the IRA itself.
So this is Lord Maurice Gibson and his wife, Lady Cecily. Yeah. They booked tickets for the ferry and all that in their own names.
Well, this was something that, I mean, in terms of security, basic security, no judge should have been allowed to do that. But who was going to tell, you know, the Lord Chief kind of, you know, hey, listen, you know, that's not the way you behave. They left themselves very vulnerable, but I think they would have been vulnerable anyway. I think they were being stalked, you know, and they'd made this trip many times. So they were known. Right?
And the question was, the information which was so exact as to where the handover would be to their RUC guards, because the Gardaí brought them up as far as the border. They had to cross the border on their own in this no man's land.
That's the other thing, that they go into that no man's land, but once they're there, I mean, that's it over. And the thing is that a lot of people were very, very concerned. I know the Special Branch of Northern Ireland were very concerned that there were leaks south of the border. But this is something that I think happened in that particular part of the
And there
the
was
Republic.
One individual who was specifically named, but there's no proof positive that
no,
that individual...
No, well, this is it. I mean, I say in the book, you can't really say, well, for, you know, definitely this person was the leaker within the Guardian in Dundalk. But certainly there was information that came out of Dundalk. I mean, there were two leading cops who were killed after leaving Dundalk for a meeting. So, you know, this sort of thing was going on. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Now, the other story we'll talk about is one that many people are familiar with because they recently saw the Disney Plus series Say Nothing, which is based on a very good book, which is based in turn on information given directly to the project that was going to record
the Boston Tapes
project, which was going to get information from people to get the truth, which would not be revealed until after their deaths.
Yeah. Well, this book was written by a man called Patrick Radden Keefe. He contacted me about 2 years before he wrote the book, and I didn't know who he was. I didn't know that he'd worked in Langley. I didn't know he'd worked in the Pentagon. I don't think anybody did until after the book was published. But then that maybe explains why he had a 67-page index. I mean, nobody has a 67-page index unless you're rewriting the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. So the thing about him was that he told America, look, this story, I've unpacked it. The mystery no longer exists.
Yeah.
And this was really about the murder of that
Jean
poor woman, Jean McConville.
Now, talk to me about Jean herself, because she was already... She had a huge family, but no husband. She was already had suffered a tragedy.
Yes, her husband was dead. I mean, she also had there was a Protestant background there too. I think she ran up against some very, very tough women in the Lower Falls, and these were members of the IRA's coming them on the female wing of the IRA. And I think that Jean ran up against them. She was someone who didn't want to get involved. She didn't want to hide weapons.
So she minded her own business.
Precisely. And I think that that really isolated her in many ways.
There was stories going around that she was a tout for the British Army.
Of course.
But it's so ridiculous
also,
on the face
and
of it.
And also that she had a special radio. There was never any evidence that she ever had that. And that she was sort of giving, she was an informant. There's no proof that she was an informant. It's speculative. And it's not unreasonable to say she may have been an informant.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that she should have been...
Yeah, but there's no proof she was, and only speculation.
Yes.
Only speculation there, but nothing more we can say.
Nothing more than
that. Now, she was abducted in front of her children.
Yes.
And taken away. She wasn't killed immediately.
No. I think there's probably, as happened in other cases with some of the disappeared, there was a discussion about who's going to kill her. I mean, for instance, one of the disappeared, young McKee, young fellow, the guys who were given charge of killing him said they couldn't do it, so they had to send for Belfast. To Belfast were two other guys who came down here who were higher nuts who killed him, you know, and buried him. So Jean, I think, was in the same position that they were discussing, well, should we or should we not?
She was being brought south of the border.
Absolutely. And that's because a lot of the killings like that took place over the border. And the people who were involved in them were from south of the border. But with Jean, you have a situation where in the Disney series, she's in a lonely place on a beach in a hole in the ground, and there are three people standing over her. Now, two of those people we know, one's called McClure and one's called Dolores Price. The third person was a female, but I can't name her because I don't really know if she was there or not. Hmm. Our friend and, you know, Brad and Keith can name whoever he wants, but I hope he's got the proof, because the people who were there with this third person, two of them are dead, right? I understood that the three of them each fired a round into Jean McConville as she was in that grave kneeling down. And I don't know if the Garda ever had any forensics to show that there were three bullets fired or there were any bullets at all found in the grave, any casings, yeah. Right? Now, what Keith didn't know when he wrote this and Disney took it up was there were three other people watching this woman being executed, and they were gravediggers. And one of them was a Garda informant. Now, he is later, and this is the interesting part of this story, he is later exposed as an informant, but he's allowed to leave and make a new life in America because his father was connected to the IRA, was a serious IRA operator.
So we had six people around this hole in the ground.
Six people. So Keith didn't know that when he wrote Say Nothing. He just knew there were three, and he thought, well, he knew who the shooter was. So... Mm-hmm. You can't prove
but,
that.
But I mean, anyone who was there, be they, well, if they're deceased, it's not relevant in terms of any charges. But anyone who was there, who literally, to quote unquote, said nothing,
four people
is colluding in it anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, this is true, Pat. I mean, you've got four people who were there as part of that operation, right? The one who was the informant, Garda informant, people said to me, "Well, you know, that means the Garda knew where Jean was buried and who was involved." But as I said, you've got to be very, very cautious when you make that claim, you make that statement, assertion, because agents will tell, I mean, handlers will tell you that agents are never reliable all the time. They can be very unreliable. So this guy who was the agent, who was the gravedigger, may not have told his handlers in the Garda that he was there at all.
Yeah.
But he did get off, you know, the NIRA. Yeah.
So there's so many... questions which should be answered but may never be answered.
This is the problem. It's one of the things in the book that there's a lot of stuff which will never be unpacked. I don't think the British government can unpack it because they don't know what's down there either. There's a lot of dirt, really.
The question of Gerry Adams and all of that, you know, he, I think, is taking legal action against Disney as well.
Yeah, I mean, people say to me, look, was Gerry Adams a member of the IRA? It's a favourite question. Everybody asks the question. My answer is very simple. I don't have any proof that he was. I mean, so I can't say, you know, Gerry Adams is a member of the IRA.
I mean, there is a signing on process that you swear on the book or whatever.
Yeah, but
you're going to be a member. And if you haven't done that, technically... You may not be.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that I never interviewed him as a member of the IRA. I never did. So, and I never saw him. I mean, I talked to people like Brendan Hughes, who was, you know, involved with IRA intelligence, and I talked to a lot of serious operators, some I wish I hadn't spoken to at all, because they later threatened to kill me. But the thing is that Gerry Adams, I never interviewed in that context. So when people say to me, oh, yeah, sure, he was a member of the IRA.
But you know what I mean?
I don't know.
Why... would you be relevant to political discussions if you weren't a member of the IRA?
Well, the British will say that he was, and they'll say, well, that's why they had him. I mean, for instance, look, John Major sent David Davis, right, his right-hand man, to talk to me in London. And I met him. And I tried to meet him as a journalist because he wanted to know what I thought about the IRA and did I think that the British could do a deal with Adams. And I said, I think you can, because I think he wants to have his name on the history of the period. But you're going to have to bring McGuinness on board because he's the only one who can keep him alive because McGuinness has the army. Wow. Now, I didn't say, and he didn't say to me, well, look, Gerry Adams is IRA. That's why we want to talk to him. So you can judge that for what it is. My attitude was,
are we all dancing on the head of a pen?
Adams. Well, it's with the orchestra, yes.
So many women were involved. I mean, there were women who had relationships with British Army soldiers, you know, normal, yes, romantic, yeah, relationships, who came to not an end necessarily, but they might be tarred and feathered for their troubles. There were others who might have been engaged in, if you like, touting in order to get,
sure,
information from the British.
The women
Army
were involved at all kinds of levels. I mean, you had the people like Mairead Farrell, who was killed in Gibraltar. And you have police women who died through, you know, bombings. You have other women whose children were being targeted and they could do nothing about it. I mean, there's one person in the book, and this is Tracy Coulter, and she ends up marrying an assassin called Two Gun McCaig. And her father is a brigadier in the UDA in the same loyalist organization who can't say to this guy, stop beating my daughter when he marries her. Right. And yeah, you know, she's quite a remarkable young woman. She's very, very talkative. And she's been very brave in confronting drug taking and drug selling in her neighborhood. But this is the kind of thing that women had to go through. We didn't see it at the time, you know.
Well, the book is a marvelous book. Your last, you claim?
Yes.
On Ireland,
yes,
at any,
yeah,
rate.
Yeah, 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 last in Ireland. But, you know.
Okay, it's published by Merrion Press.
Yep.
It's called The Sorrow and the Loss, subtitled The Tragic Shadow Cast by the Troubles on the Lives of Women. Its author is Martin Dillon. And Martin, thank you very much for joining us.
No, it's good to see you
today.
Again, Pat.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.